Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. Later in the program, we're going to be talking about this year's exhibition, Camp Art and Sustainability. We're also going to be talking to the Vedantic teacher, Shubhraji. Right now, I would like to welcome Shelley Mann-Lev. She is the prevention coordinator for the Santa Fe Public Schools, and she's chair of the Santa Fe TV Turnoff Coalition, and her lovely daughter, Eliana, is here with us as well. She is a fifth grader right here in Santa Fe. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. We're glad to be here.
It's good to have you. And TV Turnoff Week, this is something we've now been doing for years, and you've been doing it for years. What is it? What's the point of it, turning off your TV for a week?
Well, this is the 13th year. It's been done on a national and even international level, and the fifth year we've been doing it in Santa Fe. 5 years ago, I decided to come out of the closet that I'm not a TV watcher. And, you know, when you say that, it's almost worse than not eating donuts. Because, you know, people, you say you don't sugar, they go, oh, my God, you know, like, are you perfect or something? Well, you know, not watching TV is considered to be a radical thing in our culture. And, you know, it's not that I don't get the news. I read. I listen to the radio. But, you know, it's what is the purpose of TV Turnoff Week? It's to give people an alternative, a choice that, you know, TV, like so many things, or by TV we mean all screens, TV, video, DVDs, video games, that it becomes a habit. And you just do it, and you do it more and more, and some people do it an awful lot. You know, the average person in the United States watches over 4 hours a day of TV, and that doesn't include other screens, and we know that these other screens also take an enormous amount of time.
Other screens being computer games, video games,
DVDs,
computer screens.
What you're sitting watching on your iPad playing with your little, you know, it's
right.
Just amazing, the proliferation. So we're hoping that people use this week to take a break. And what you find, and I was just talking to a mom, a few days ago, so interesting. I said, you know, she was really excited and really wanting to, her daughters go to Seiki and Madri, and she said, I want to make sure it happens here. We're going to do a cookout for all the families that participate, and she's got different events planned. I said, well, why is this so important to you? She said, you know, it's so interesting. We have what's called the TV creep in our household. You know, our girls just kind of, you know, you get in this habit, and during the winter you watch more and more, and they don't realize they don't need it. So TV Turnoff Week comes around, and we take a break. It's like wiping our palates clean. Nobody watches. In the first few days, maybe there's a little grumbling. It's a little... By the end of the week, you know, they're doing other things. They're doing life, you know. We're talking. We're having conversations. We're doing art stuff. We're taking walks. We're out in the garden. And we go realize we don't need it. And we also realize some of the things it does to our family that aren't so good, aren't so healthy.
Like what?
Things like... People don't talk to each other. What happens when people don't talk to each other? Well, you know, the good news is they don't fight, but the bad news is they don't share ideas. They don't share their lives. They don't know each other. They don't engage. And so we grow more distant, you know, like separate little robots, you know, moving in different directions. So we lose that sense of connection. We don't talk about what's going on in life. You know, there's a lot of things in this world, whether it's the war in Iraq or global warming or even the good things that are happening in terms of, you know, the awards people are winning or the contests or the books that people are reading and the things that are happening at school and work. So, you know, that sharing of information and, of course, just the opportunity to live, to be creative and to move. You know, we find we don't exercise. It's a lot easier to come home. You know, you feel tired. Even, you know, I have to say for me, when I feel tired, I just want to veg out, as we say, right, and plop ourselves in front of that TV. And, you know, you get fatter and you get more sluggish. And so, you know, we just move a lot more. And
now
that's healthy for all of us.
I mean, when you say you get fatter, obesity is an actual issue.
It's a very significant public health issue that causes many health problems, as people know, and it's an ever-increasing epidemic, which we don't understand fully the nature of, but I think the one thing that people agree upon is that one of the contributors to obesity is the amount of passive watching of screens that we have in our culture, especially by our young people. You know, there's nothing that uses less calories than sitting in front of a TV. You know, think about it. And then, of course, often we add in calories. Meaning you eat. What do? You see ads, snacks, and it's you know, one of the things I talk to parents about sometimes is people think of TV as a free babysitter. And I understand. I have, you know, a family myself. It's hard. But, you know, one time I thought I would do a poster on how TV maybe wasn't such a free babysitter. Because what happens is they did a study once of kids where they had them not watch TV for a few weeks, and they compared them to kids who were continuing to watch, and the number of times that they asked for things, whether it was food or commercial items, you know, consumer items, that kids beg, and they beg hard, we know, you know, not once, not twice, but I want that Barbie, I want that, you know, name the brand. Right. And it's heavily fueled by what they see. So, you know, that's an aspect of it as well. But they eat snacks, and obesity is a serious health issue.
Well, I have to say, I've been watching a little more TV since the last TV turn-off week, and it's not a good thing, but I can understand how when you see, my weakness, I think, is the pizza. When they lift that pizza up and the strings of cheese go down, it makes you want to get on the phone and order one, have it sent to you right away. And it does, I have been observing in myself something that feels a little bit like addiction. Like you want to watch this stupid story till the end, even if you're not really interested in it, even if you're not really interested in the characters, you want to know what happens. And you also get drawn into the energy of it, and you are not really quite in your house anymore, and you're not really quite in your body anymore. And those things are really worth observing what happens when you take a deep breath and turn the thing off.
Yeah, well, I think that's very insightful, you know, and that's, again, what during this break, sometimes you can feel the craving, I think, for, not for everyone, but for some people it is an addiction. I mean, what's the definition of an addiction? Something that you continue to do despite negative consequences and even when you don't want to. And I think people, you know, and they'll have a chance to explore that potentially this week or even just for a day. You know, we say TV turn-off week. Well, you know, there's many different ways to explore that, but the issue of addiction is both to the object itself, to watching television, that activity, but TV also contributes, is so highly associated with other addictions, such as tobacco use and alcohol use.
Is it really? I mean, they figured that out?
It is what we call in public health a dose response, meaning the more you watch, the more likely you are to do it. I'm holding up my hand right here and putting it like it's on a mountain slope. Those young people, and they've studied young people more extensively, who watch more TV are more likely to use tobacco. Those who watch less TV are less likely to use tobacco, and it increases with each additional hour of use. And that's also true for alcohol. You know, whether that is what's in the content of what's being shown, because we know, if any of you have watched programming for teenagers, it's very interesting. We had one of our wonderful young people, Ryan Dish, he's a fabulous student over at St. Mike's, he did a little personal study. He watched the 15 most popular teenage shows. He was really curious one weekend, and he spent his weekend watching TV. He's a media literacy expert. And 14 of the 15, just like the data shows, had alcohol all over them. These are the shows that you and I don't, you know, we're not drawn to, I don't think. I don't, are you, I mean, I'm not drawn to
them. Speak for yourself. I don't even know what shows we're talking about.
Oh, I don't know either. I could give a few lists. But anyway, they're not the shows that are targeted at us. They're the shows that are targeted at our teenagers and that they watch in great, great numbers. And why would you show it? Why would you put alcohol ads on a show that's primarily a teenage audience? Why would you do that? You want them to drink.
You want them to drink. Well, it's actually interesting, as I've watched TV at different times of day over the last year, to see what they're selling at what time of day.
Oh, interesting. You've done your own little research. What have you found?
Well, late on Friday and Saturday night, there's an awful lot of erectile dysfunction ads. That's one thing. There's, on the Travel Channel, I mean, on the Food Channel, there's not only a lot of food ads, but there's ads trying to get you to take cruises to Hawaii. I mean, it's very demographically studied. They're not screwing around. They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing, and they show alcohol ads to extensively, you know, in fact, more alcohol ads to young people under the age of 21 for whom it's illegal to buy alcohol than they do on adult shows.
Isn't that amazing?
Brand loyalty starts young. We know that kids at the age of 2 can develop brand loyalty. TV is a wonderful mechanism for that.
We're talking to Shelley Manlev, and her daughter Eliana is here. Now, you have lived pretty much a TV-free life?
Yeah.
What's that like for you?
Well, it's kind of hard with other kids when they start talking about what's on TV and what movies that are good and what they've watched and things like that, but I don't really want to watch TV. I enjoy reading much more.
Now, what about about movies? Do you go to movies in the theater?
No.
Are movies, Shelley, part of this whole of what we're not doing this week? In other words, going down to the mall and watching a movie or the CCA or whatever?
No, that's not considered. You know, movies are an interesting thing. When you go, again, there's a difference between a TV as event, if you will. You know, you gather a group of people. And, you know, we talk about a phrase of watching better, watching smarter, watching less, and watching together. You know, that's the kind of that's the motto we use for TV Turnoff Week. And we end with watching together because when people go to movies, they tend, by and large, to go with a friend, right? They have an experience. They leave that experience. They don't sit for 4 hours or 5 hours. They don't, you know, I'm sure there's a few who go for the marathon. But it's an experience that is a social experience that's shared. And then go out afterwards, talk about it, you know, have an engagement so that it isn't the kind of thing, doesn't have the same kind of both addictive quality and isolated quality and completely passive. You have to get in your car, you actually have to move, and you have to get up when it's over. So, you know, that isn't the focus of TV Turnoff Week, the event of a movie, you know.
There's a movement toward not only turning off your TV, but really extending that to all the different kinds of entertainment screens. What's this about?
Well, what's the difference between watching TV and sitting in your house on the same screen and putting on a video that replays all day long for a three-year-old? You know, what's the difference? There's a very small difference in terms of the number of ads that are seen. You do have a little control, but the basic process is very similar. You sit, you don't move. These days, unfortunately, with DVDs and videos, I don't know if you've rented one recently. Have you seen any ads on the when you've rented one recently?
On a DVD? Only previews.
Exactly. And have you tried to turn them off?
Yes, and I figured out how to do it.
Oh, you have. Well, maybe you want to tell your audience, because most people, it's very difficult. They found, even if they don't want to show those pre, and those preview ads can be 10, 15 minutes for kids, again. And it's very difficult, so you want to...
Well, there's on my remote, there's two buttons. There's menu and top menu. And if you press, I forget which one of those two it is, but it goes to the menu and bypasses the previews.
Well, that's great, because some people, I mean, I have heard parents say, I can't get rid of, you know, I think I'm being able to choose when I choose a DVD, and yet my kid still has to watch those 10 minutes or whatever it is of ads. And they're just ads, just like any others.
Use your remote, ladies and gentlemen.
Try it, right. Anyway, so the issue of passivity, the issue of what you're... You know, one of the huge issues that Eliana, you're saying you like to read instead, but, you know, we've commented many times in our family, where would we find the time? Because videos... DVDs, video games, and I think there's a particular concern about video games. The violence, you know, the violent nature and the often for some particularly young males, addictive quality of that, the hours and hours that can be spent. What are they, the question I like to ask parents is, what is your young person, what is your child not doing? What are they missing out on? And when we think about what children need to develop in a healthy way, they learn through their bodies. You know, they don't learn through passive, being talked at, being, you know, in this passive way. And so there's a deep concern amongst early childhood educators. The American Academy of Pediatrics has, you know, already now it's been 7 years, came out with a policy stance saying that children ages 2 and under should watch no.
None at all.
None.
Yeah, well, the also focusing on at one distance and not shifting your focus to near, medium, and far.
Significant
and horizon.
Concerns around eyes.
Yeah.
That's correct. And then there are many people who speculate, you know, we don't have the data yet to demonstrate, to speculate that there's actually changes in brain development, especially with, you know, extensive watching at younger ages, because what's being called for, we certainly know there's differences in language development. The kids who sit, again, passively in front of TV screens, video games, and only use the visual channel, that it's very different than, you know, if Eliane and I are playing together, she's moving around, as she, you know, that our bodies are made to move. And we learn through hands-on involvement and interaction. And, you know, the issues with literacy in schools today, I mean, kids who can't talk, how do we expect them to read? You know, when they have very small vocabularies, when they haven't been, and the way young people learn to talk is very simple.
It's through talking.
Through talking. Not being talked to, but talking.
Right.
Responding, that give and take, you know, and that's such a basic part of being human.
Well, it's just about time to go, but I wanted to ask you what is happening in Santa Fe for people who have these long chunks of time that have opened up in their day from not watching their TV this week. There's some activities and events.
There are. But first of all, I think one of the things that I see happening is spring, right?
Right.
So that's
you playing
kind of
outside a lot?
Ilya? Yeah.
I have to say, part of this whole deal, I think, plays, it has to do with the fears that a lot of Americans have about letting their children be free and go run around outside. You know, it was very sad what happened to Robbie Romero in the 90s, but it was a long time ago. It was one isolated case, and the idea that your child should therefore not be allowed to go play in the park, which is right next to your house. The park next to my house is empty much of the time, except for adult dog walkers. You know, why are not in any other country on the planet Earth, the place would be packed with children. And right. Instead, their parents won't let them go out because they're scared that somebody's going to kidnap them or something.
Well, you know, it's you're again taking us back to television and particularly news. And I know many adults who tell me I could never keep TV turned off week because I am, and they'll use the word, I'm addicted to watching the news.
Right.
And what we know is that you know, again, the research on this is just so consistent and so powerful is that people who watch the news, and many, many people do, are much more likely to have a inaccurate sense of the violence out there,
right.
To over-exaggerate the fear, because that's one of the impacts. It's called the mean world syndrome. And
it has a syndrome name. That's great.
It has a syndrome name because when you watch violence, you perceive that there's a much higher level of violence out there than there actually is. And again, they've done very interesting studies of the difference between people who watch news versus people who don't. And that doesn't mean not, you know, staying connected, not being in touch.
And we're not talking about the BBC World Report. We're talking about the sensationalistic local news.
Absolutely. We're talking about network news. And maybe in some cases the cable as well, although that wasn't what the studies were done on. So anyway, what's one of our favorite events that happens at the bowling lane that happens every year?
There's free bowling.
Saturday night, free bowling. All these events are free. That's like a key for us. So tonight at Lafarge Library at 7 o'clock, there's a great Paul Glickman. Do you remember Paul Glickman and his magic shows?
Yeah.
And then Wednesday night, again at Lafarge Library, there's this wonderful Paul has children bring their own bedtime stories, and he reads them in the most adorable way.
Oh.
So that's Wednesday night. On Friday night, the Children's Museum has a wonderful free music event, 5:30 to 7:30, that should be very, very fun.
And all these events are listed in the newspaper. Santa Fe, New Mexican. And people can also call the following number, 467-2573. That's 467-2573. And get a recording that contains all these events.
And if you're a young person, fulfills their pledge to keep TV Turnoff Week, there'll be an honor roll in the New Mexican on May 13th, and if they're not part of a participating school, please call that number as well, and we'll make sure their name appears on the list.
Shelley and Eliana Manlev, thank you so much for being with us on KSFR.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thank you for your support.
We're going to take a little break right now. Stay tuned to KSFR. We'll be right back.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Santa Fe Farmers Market. The Farmer's Market reminds you that it has moved to the parking lot of the DeVargas Center for the 2007 season. Every Saturday from 7 a.m. to noon, the market features a plethora of fruits, vegetables, meats, baked goods, and other products all grown right here in northern New Mexico, as well as serving coffee, tea, and breakfast. For more information, call 983-4098 or visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com. The George O'Keeffe Museum presents an evening of art and poetry on Tuesday, April 24th at 7 p.m. Acclaimed contemporary poet Maymay Bersenbrugge will read selected poems among works by O'Keeffe. Elegant and ethereal, intellectual and intuitive, Maymay often collaborates with visual artists such as Kiki Smith and her husband Richard Tuttle. Reservations are suggested at 946-1039. This message is sponsored by the George O'Keeffe Museum, a tax-exempt organization.
Outpost Productions and Padmini continue their celebration of Padmini's 10th anniversary with a much-anticipated concert event featuring the legendary tabla virtuoso Zakir Hussain and India's greatest living santur player, Pandit Shiv Kumar Sharma. Tuesday, April 24th, 7 p.m. at the Lensic in Santa Fe. For info, call 268-0044 or visit outpostspace.org. This message sponsored by Outpost Productions, a tax-exempt organization.
I'd like now to welcome Christina Cogdell and Conrad Skinner. They are co-curators, and Conrad is also an artist in the upcoming exhibition, Camp Art and Sustainability, which is being held again this year at Hyde State Park in the National Forest this coming weekend. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
Nice to be here.
Now, this is a tradition. How many years have you been doing it?
This is only the second year, but many of the people who participated last year said, oh, we should make this an ongoing tradition, because not only was it so much fun to go out and actually kind of go on a treasure hunt to find art in the woods and then discover these amazing pieces that were kind of nestled in the trees or hanging up or whatever, but just people hung out for a long time. Two-day exhibition, there were musicians playing, and there's lots of conversations that happened in community, so they wanted to do it again.
What is the sustainability angle on this camp, Art and Sustainability?
Well, you know, sustainability is usually a term that's used about architecture and culture, so to speak. But I think in this case, the topic is very open, and it's more of an interpretation of sustainability than actually doing things that are, so to speak, sustainable.
So it's not like the work of art is powered by an eternal solar battery or something like that.
Well, actually, some of them will be powered by solar-powered batteries. So there is, I think, the effort on the part of many artists to actually think about the materials they're using and energy sources. In part, that's due to the site. There is no electricity on site up at Hyde State Park. So,
now, this exhibition is called, this year, the theme is Miniature and Monumental. So, what's going on with that? Little tiny pieces that people have to search out as if they were looking for, mushrooms or something?
Well, I wanted people to have a feeling of the site and the scale of nature versus the scale of what they were doing. So, I asked people to kind of translate, an artwork is always something that's kind of contained, but the site is so vast. And nature is so vast that I wanted them to be thinking about that polarity.
There will be some large-scale pieces and some small pieces, but I don't know that artists are simply interpreting it as size. It can also be somewhat of a philosophical concept in terms of thinking about the micro, the macro, and our relationship to nature.
Now, are there pieces there, in other words, I can't imagine that anybody would do an oil painting of a landscape and then put it up in the landscape.
None of that.
What kind of things are we seeing?
All the works are really going to be what's called installations. In other words, they're assemblies of material that are brought to the site and then set up, often with a consideration for their location in the site. And there's quite a bit of variety in the site. There's a stream, there's a trail, there are little lean-tos. So the artists have a choice of what kind of situation to put their work in.
Now, at the risk of asking a completely impertinent question, isn't nature beautiful all on its own? What does it need art for?
Well, one thing that I'll tell you about that, I mean, absolutely it is. And Hyde State Park is a gem that we have, 6 miles out of town. Many of the people who came last year had never been to the state park. And so there was the draw of art for them to go to a place they'd never seen.
Right.
And then when they were there, they're like, wow, this is just so close. I need to come back here more often. So it's a way of getting people to be more aware of their environment and what's around us.
So that's really the role that's built in for the viewer, for the audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, and like I said, the fun of the treasure hunt, of finding the art once you're up there, too. So,
are people, it's called camp. Are people camping on Saturday night?
People are invited to camp. The park has donated its two main large group campsites, and so the artists are invited to. Some of them are a little bit older. They're not so excited about camping out. So some will be there. A lot of the younger group will be camping out Friday and Saturday night, and the public is welcome to join us.
So this is called Camp Art and Sustainability. The theme is Miniature and Monumental. It's at Hyde State Park on the 27th and the 28th, I guess that's Saturday and Sunday.
Friday and Saturday.
Oh, Friday
actually.
And Saturday, so people can camp out on Friday night.
Friday night and Saturday night.
And Saturday night. And if people want to find out more, is there a number that they can call, or is there anything they should do?
Absolutely. There's the number at the park is 983-7175, and my personal number, this is Christina, is 424-5215 at work. I will also mention on Friday night at 6:30, Round Mountain is going to perform live music, and there will be Poi Fire Dancers as well. And the next day, on Saturday, middle of the day, Dante the compost worm will come out and do his skits for the public.
Well, all that and much, much more. Christina Cogdell and Conrad Skinner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking to the teacher, Shubhraji. Stay tuned to KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten by Locals Care. Locals Care Community Cards reward you for shopping and dining at over 100 locally owned businesses. You can support a Santa Fe nonprofit and earn rewards for yourself at any Locals Care business. Find program information and a current list of participating businesses and nonprofits at locals-care.com. Offered in cooperation with the Santa Fe Alliance and sponsored by Century Bank, Los Alamos National Bank, the New Mexican, and the City of Santa Fe.
College of Santa Fe presents CAMP, Art and Sustainability, a two-day outdoor art exhibition at Hyde Memorial State Park. Regional artists and designers address sustainability in this year's theme, Miniature and Monumental. Works range from solar-powered video to suspended pod sculptures to performance art. Opening reception Friday, April 27th, 4 to 10 p.m. with Round Mountain. The exhibit continues Saturday, the 28th from 10 to 8. More information at 983-7175. The College of Santa Fe is a tax-exempt organization.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Garcia Street Books and their owners, Eva and Edward Borens, celebrating more than 30 years as booksellers. Located at 376 Garcia Street, where Stuart Woods, New York Times bestselling author, signs Fresh Disasters Monday, April 23rd at 5 p.m., and Ann Cummins, a recipient of a Lannan Foundation Fellowship, signs Yellow Cake on Thursday, April 26th at 5. More information at garciastreetbooks.com.
I'd like now to welcome Shubhraji. She is a teacher of Vedanta, and we're going to find out what that is in just a moment. And she's here for a Yoga Vedanta weekend to benefit yoga in the schools. Welcome, Shubhraji, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Namaste. It's a joy to be here with you, Mary.
Thank you. I've been reading your website, reading a little bit about Vedanta. I read in graduate school some of the Vedas, and I'm trying to remember what this tradition is about. And one of the things that struck me was the sentence that all conflicts are resolved in silence. What does this mean? I was struck by that because we're so used to resolving conflicts through conversation.
Silence is the very essence of your being. But as Vedanta, which is a universal philosophy, says, this silence is not a void, it is not zero, but it is the all-fulfilling consciousness within you, which, if you inquire deeply, is the nature of bliss, joy, perfection. In fact, it is all that we seek in life. So we seek it outside through words, through our work, through action, but ultimately where is it experienced? In silence. Whenever you experience a nice cup of coffee, as here, or something, a thing of beauty even in the world, that joy is experienced in the moment of silence.
Now, the joy that you are talking about is something that you say is the inherent essential quality that all human beings have. Yes? We all
Absolutely.
Have this inside of us?
This is the whole theme of Vedanta. Vedanta is not any dogmatic belief, but it says each one can inquire. It is not a religion, it is a philosophy. In fact, it is the underlying philosophy of all Eastern thought. So what Vedanta says is, please turn your attention within and inquire that this joy that you are seeking, when you discover who you are, and as you inquire deeply into the nature of who you are, you will discover that when all the thoughts are removed, when all your stress is removed, your natural state is joy, isn't it? Because that's what you seek. You seek happiness. And that happiness is our natural state. That's why we say seek it. Everything abides in its own natural state. So this is the premise of Vedanta.
When it's so interesting to me, because when you talk about natural state, I mean, it's pretty clear that we evolved on the planet Earth, there were primates that came before us, before we reached this human state. And it's not at all clear that any other animal that you can talk about on the planet Earth has their natural state, bliss and joy, nor do they have the ability to turn within. So what is that animal part of us, and how do you understand that in Vedanta?
See, Vedanta says one thing, that you are conscious, I am conscious, the animal is conscious, even a worm is conscious. But the levels of consciousness, just as physicists are saying, every object, even a stone, a plant, animal and man, they are all conscious. Stone is not conscious of, but stone exists. This consciousness is common, is the common thread. This consciousness is the same. However, because of the levels of evolution, this consciousness is vibrating at different frequencies. So a man, once we attain this status of being a human being alone has the intellect or the capacity to completely realize their blissful nature. Right now, this blissful nature is covered with our stress, with our wrong perception of things, and in fact, our wrong understanding about who we are. We think we are only the personality. This personality is right now, at this level in the world, most of us are a mixture of good and bad. A mixture of divine as well as what you call this animal part. I would call it the lower, baser urges, which we have acquired from the impression of whatever past actions we have done. So we are a combination, and the whole program of spiritual unfoldment is to slowly move from this lower personality within us and come to recognize the diviner essence, the higher potential, which is present in each one of us and which is common to all of us, and raise the standard of our being so that we can come back into society, not run away, and serve and live with joy and love.
Now, you talked about a moment ago the various stresses that modern society gives us, and this is something that you have very much worked on, is adapting these teachings to people living in modern industrial, you know, suburbs and cities and lifestyles and so on. What are the stresses that we face that get in the way of this realization?
The primary stress we face is our own mind. The stress is really not outside, but who created the stress? A society is individuals put together. When individuals do not know who they really are, when we don't understand, when we are in spiritual ignorance, we are very evolved. We are very intellectually very competent. Our IQ is very high, emotional quotient high. But spiritually we are ignorant about who we are. We do not know that all of us are connected with the same life force, call it God, call it consciousness. Give it any name, Allah, Buddha, Krishna, Rama, Jesus, light, energy. So when we don't know that, we as individuals misinterpret life and the external world, not only the things, but other people around us, because we don't understand, we don't experience our oneness with them. When we misunderstand, we misinterpret, naturally we want to feel secure, we become, what should I say, we become aggressive, defensive, etc. In this spiritual ignorance, we get disconnected from who we are, and naturally when we are disconnected from who we are, we cannot recognize the divinity in the other person. And so we create this stress. And eventually, layer upon layer, the stress gets so much due to our misunderstanding, and we plug into, I'm using the word, we plug into the collective consciousness, and there you are. Each individual together makes up the society. And here is the stress. So as each individual begins to inquire, what is the real source of life? What is the true source of my happiness? Does it merely lie in things outside? Or is there something higher? Is there a divine potential? Is there a deeper essence within me? If I can perhaps, by some method, begin to identify with that deeper part of me, which is perfect, See, it is not something new to gain. Vedanta says you are already the perfection you seek.
It seems that there are so many stresses that are external in modern life. So, for example, one of the stresses that people face is that in order to pay their rent and put food on the table, they have to work 2 and 3 jobs or more, and they don't have time to live, to be with their children, to be with one another.
Very good statement by you. Again, I will say true, when you look at it from at face value, what you're saying is correct. But if you analyze a little deeply, when my desires are higher, I want to get more and more, I want to have a particular standard of living, my desires are high, and so my needs are greater, and so in order to get those needs met, the activity will be greater, and if I lack the centeredness to prioritize my life and to understand, then I will go into stress. But really speaking, if we look at the ancient time, people lived in the same world. They had the same problems. In fact, their life was harder. However, they had the intellectual equipoise, the emotional equipoise to meet all the challenges of life. So though we are struggling, we have this belief system that we need to struggle so much, and we turn outward and dissipate the energy with which we could accomplish all of it. And if our desires were what I call simple living, and we would fulfill those, definitely Vedanta doesn't say that you remain poor. Slowly first take care of the inner layer of your personality and work towards fulfilling your desires, raise the standard of society, live in community and harmony. When that understanding comes, we begin to just do what is in front of us. And the stress within is reduced. The pressure is there from the outside, I don't disagree. But our ability to face the pressure, naturally the equipoise with which we face the pressure, the action results in a productive result. It is the mood of the mind which determines the outcome of any given piece of work, isn't it? Like you are working. Somebody else maybe in your place would be stressed. I have to do this. But look at you. You're sitting here with ease because you're centered. You love what you do. So when we love what we do, love is the ingredient that reduces stress, isn't it?
Yeah, and that brings up another point which I think is very difficult about the society in which we live, is that a lot of jobs that people do are incapable of being loved. In other words, it's very hard to love many of the jobs that are provided, you know, in which a living, even a meager living, is provided, because they're horrible jobs.
An average person judges work as good or bad. But someone who is questioning life looks at work or looks at any given situation not merely as what it is, but what can it bring out within me? Whether I am a janitor, whether I am a sweeper, whether I am a CEO, whether I am a marketing or salesperson, the job by itself is neither good nor bad. It is my programming, my idea that it is good or bad, that brings my energy into a lower or higher plane of consciousness. With that energy, naturally, when I feel depressed about this work, and this work itself is not sacred, the work is not sacred because at some level in my personality, I'm unable to feel the very sacredness within me. If I can perhaps, through this spiritual knowledge, which is the knowledge of the self, Vedanta is universal. It says you are perfect. You are perfect in your essence. Even though your personality may have some stresses, if you learn to contact your inner being in the right way, your contact with society and the job that you do will become wonderful, will become beautiful. So, When I understand that the job that I'm doing or the work given to me is not only to accomplish an end outside, externally, but what is it that this job can teach me about myself? How can I be the best, and how can I do this piece of work in the best way? And once I come into any job with that frame of mind, I am in the spiritual so-called frame of mind. And then job does not become the end, but it becomes a means to purify my own inner being. Purify, make it quiet, make it joyful. It doesn't matter what I'm doing then, because when I feel joy, then all work is joyful. I may be good at something and not so good at something else, but I learn to gravitate and I get motivated. And if I am in a job which I do not like, by changing my inner attitude and my energy towards that job, by raising my own consciousness and awareness about myself and what I'm contributing to society, because nobody is less than anyone, I perfect myself, and when my energy is changed, that job, this is the universe. It is a universal law. There are laws in operation. That job automatically drops off and I move on to another job. Something higher, something deeper.
You know, it's funny. When you talk about happiness as internal, what you're saying makes sense. When you talk about it as external, it makes no sense at all. Because when you have, for example, sweatshops, when you have child labor, mm-hmm. when you have people who are exposed to pesticides, when you have people who are breathing asbestos, when you have children who are eating lead, those things cannot be solved through joy. They have to be solved through political process and the understanding that... the understanding that real external problems cause unhappiness in people.
Who created those external problems?
Greedy people.
Exactly. That means our inner state of mind. Pollution outside... Ecology, the word ecology, eco, it echoes man's inner state of mind. So this is the premise of spiritual teaching, especially something like Vedanta, which is why we are trying to bring this weekend to create an awareness of yoga, which will help you physically, emotionally, and bring you into your spiritual self, and of Vedanta, the philosophy underlying this principle of yoga. Yoga is the technique by which you and I can change the very molecular structure of the way we feel and think. And once the individual is less greedy, once the individual evolves to inculcate qualities of love and mercy and joy, in the understanding that each one is of the divine essence, that I am as sacred because I'm connected to the universal source. In fact, I am that in my very essence. Once we begin to have that kind of reverence and respect for our higher self, call it the divine essence, when we look outward, we will see the same in the other. We will then respect nature. This was the way that the Vedic system of philosophy lived. The people lived this way. When I change my thinking, my own mind becomes less polluted, and only when my mind and heart is not polluted with greed, with jealousy, then alone I can do some good in the world. So politics is who? Who are the politicians? Who are the grassroots level people? Who is society? Until individuals change their mind and heart based upon a universal understanding of all of life, that each and every individual is divine and conscious, and I have no right to exploit anyone. I only must live. I must bring out, I must manifest the love in my heart, the understanding that I am one with all living beings.
So those people who are exploited have to wait for the ones who are doing the exploiting?
No. If you change, supposing you are being exploited, please tell me this. If you are touched by this philosophy, if you are touched by this spiritual understanding, we call it Vedanta, it can be through any religion, I'm not claiming any religion. Vedanta is a philosophy. If I begin to understand my own divinity, my own sacredness, how do people change? How did Mahatma Gandhi change? What are the great masters of rishis of India? Some of them were in a very poor, decrepit condition. But as they changed internally, all change happens from within. As that person was exploited somehow, we call it grace, you can call it anything you want. It depends what language, what words you use. When that person who is suffering, after all, we are all connected. Someone, somewhere, the universe is full of love. If we concentrate on hatred, we will invoke that and we'll become that, which is what is happening. But in this world today also, concentrate on the positive. On there are enough people like you, like people who are conscious of issues, who are doing something about it. So if such a person came in contact with someone who is suffering and inspired them to understand who they are and put in even an iota of self-worth in them, that little child or that person who's being exploited will change their very thinking. And when their thinking changes, they will come from a space of strength and come from a space of knowingness. And by that, they will be able to transcend the external condition they are in. They will be able to speak up. They will be able to move. So it is all a question of the heart of the problem is not the external. The heart of the problem is our inner beings. And this is what we are trying to change. This is the work of my teacher, Swami Chinmayananda, who came to this country since the late 60s and spread this universal message in all over America, in fact, Europe, globally, and in India, to awaken people to their greater and diviner potential. And this is what we are trying to do with the Yoga Vedanta Weekend, to raise funds, exactly this, not only for Santa Fe Yoga in schools, but also for Sri Sharda Devi Ayurveda Hospital in India, where the doctor is going to treat poor children, men and women, who have no money to spend on medicines. His consultation will be free. Towards this end, the community of Santa Fe has really come together. People have worked not to get anything, but just out of the spirit of love. Here is an example that we are practicing, where people, ordinary people who were stressed and strained, when they have come together in love to contribute something for a greater good, they became inspired and their stress level has gone down. In that, they've been able to solve their problems. So here we are, the local yoga studios, the Vedic Chant Center, the Yoga Source, they are giving their space, the Ironstone Garden, they are providing the space, and so many teachers of knowledge, Vedic chanting, yoga, vastu, the Sanskrit, Ayurveda, Vedant, we'll be giving talks all free. And the funds will go to help these two projects. This is the idea. We are even doing a community prayer, which will be two Indian priests coming and chanting for the welfare of the entire community of Santa Fe. If I send you love, whether you know me or not, at some point in your being, because you and I are connected with the same consciousness, you are alive because of the same force. I'm alive because of the same force. I may eat Indian food, you may eat Western food, but we are both one in essence. If I send you love, whether you know it or not, you will receive it in your being. And with that idea, we are doing this fire prayer with ancient mantras, ancient Sanskrit mantras, which will fill the air. And as you know, physicists say everything is energy. Through this is another way. Also, we will alter the very vibration of the environment. It will help the ecology and it will reach. The intention is the most important thing in any work. It will reach for the welfare of the community of Santa Fe. We decided to do this. It doesn't matter who the people are.
We're talking to Shubhraji. So Friday night there is a community...
Puja.
Puja. What is a puja?
Puja is a ritual by which you connect, a way through which you connect to the ideal that the ritual represents. So it is a sacred ceremony. So we call it a puja. where we invoke. We are invoking the higher in us, but since we don't know, we don't see God, we don't know consciousness, we don't know truth, we use a symbol. So in the Vedic ancient time, fire was the symbol. Fire. It is not, don't misunderstand, it is pagan or anything, but it's fire is the symbol, nature is the symbol, which has heat, light, energy, and we invoke the divine consciousness which is within us, which is the very source, the same divine consciousness that created you and me and the dog and the worm and the plant and the stone, is the consciousness which is the source of all of creation. So we invoke that. With the mantras, we will invoke the nine planets, we will invoke Lord Ganesh, which is the energy of removing obstacles and bringing wisdom, and the divine feminine. So all this will be done so that the community can integrate, come together in love and harmony. And we should learn to work together, no matter what our differences are, if our goal is common. If the goal is to raise, which is what I'm trying to do, to raise the consciousness of all people by integrating this spiritual knowledge given down to us by the masters, it is time tested. It has been verified, and it is based on the scriptures, the revelations to those masters contemplating in the Himalayan mountains. So if we can raise the consciousness of all people by allowing them to integrate the spiritual knowledge into their day-to-day lives, the whole world absolutely will be a better place.
Well, on that note, Shubhaji, it's time to go. Thank you so much for being with us here on KSFR.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Oh, by the way, if you would like to find more information on this, you can call 983-1781. And you can also email vedantasantafe@earthlink.net. And you can visit namahom, namahom.org. And there's also tickets for the Trinayan Dance Collective available at the ARC Bookstore at the Yoga Source, or once again by calling that number 983-1781. Well, you've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org, and this program can be heard any time of day at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services of Santa Fe, on the web at dotfoil.com. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. And if you've missed any of the many phone numbers that you've given, that we've given out today, you can just give me a call over there. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, the Colors of Jazz. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte, and we will see you tomorrow. Ciao.